Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks, and we have a great show with a wonderful guest who is an expert on today's topic. And today we are discussing the topic of the explosion of short-term rentals, deal or no deal. Joining me by phone is Stephanie Anderson, Manager for Industry Operations with the National Apartment Association. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, good morning, Paul.
So, the explosion of short-term rentals, for the benefit of the listeners, let's define what the industry considers a short-term rental.
Well, I think like anything in the industry, depending on who you ask, you may get a different answer.
Right.
But, you know, I like to take it back a little over a decade ago when we talked about short-term rentals. That was typically known as anything less than 12 months. Anything less than a standard lease term. And then, you know, a couple of years after that, it was less than 6 months and less than 3 months. And now what we're seeing in the industry are they're more relatable short-term rentals, just like a hotel's would be. So sometimes you're looking at people that are interested in renting for, you know, less than a month at a time. So really, when you define short-term rentals, you're looking at a short period of time that someone is staying. So that could be a vacation rental, or if we're talking more as it pertains to our nature of the business and apartments, you find a lot of people like to do 30-day stays, so 1 month.
And this is a relatively new phenomenon for the industry.
It is. I'm sure you've heard the term Airbnb, you mm-hmm. know, unless you've been under a rock mm-hmm. in the last couple of years, that has kind of poked its head out. So I think thanks to that alone, you're seeing a lot of people that are discussing the conversations of short-term rentals because of it.
So let's talk about the explosion as we've titled this. What is the saturation of this? Is it coastal? Is it across the country? What are we seeing as far as it's developed to this point?
Well, you're definitely seeing it across the country. There's no doubt about that. It is a slower progression as compared to some of the other trends that we do see in the industry. Some of the numbers I was looking at yesterday was about 17% was really trending just back in 2014 in terms of how many listings were on short-term rental housing provider websites. And, you know, we've only seen that compared to about 25% this year. So you look at those numbers, Paul, and you think, okay, we're talking about this being a trend, but that's not a huge difference, right, between those numbers. But that's on listings. And keep in mind that a lot of people aren't necessarily listing in those avenues. There's still other websites that are not geared 100% towards short-term rentals that people are listing on. I use the example of Craigslist because it's an easy, free way to people to list that they have an offering for a short-term rental, whether it be vacation or a short-term stay in an apartment community.
And, you know, when I think of Airbnb, I'm thinking about a homeowner that may have a beach house or a lake house somewhere, and that's a way for them to generate income is to list on Airbnb. Apartment community is a little different story. What are you seeing in the way of how that's all happening, and are the owners of the apartment communities the ones who are putting the listing up, or do they lease them to a third party who does that?
Well, that's a great question. That really turns into when I speak about multiple business models. So there's a lot of different models out there when we talk about short-term rentals as it pertains to especially apartment communities and how they operate. So I'll take it back for a moment here and think about when I first joined the industry back in 2006. The property I worked at was very heavy on corporate housing. Corporate housing was a model, you know, man, they've existed for over 30 years now. And that model is having a company come in, set up short-term corporate housing, sometimes for, you know, 30 days to 3 months. And that was, you know, executives that were coming in and needing a place to stay as they were relocating to a new city. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that was the term of short-term housing at that moment. But, you know, what we're seeing now is a multitude of business models. You've got direct subleasing from residents. So that is a model very synonymous with Airbnb that we spoke about. So those are listings on a website that say, hey, I'm out of town or I'm not here. I'm listing a room for rent or an apartment for rent during a specified period of time. Now, keep in mind that we're finding about 5% of those units are unofficially listed, meaning that their management companies don't allow them to sublease. Mm-hmm. So they're doing it unofficially, under the radar, trying to make some extra income. Mm-hmm. You've also got your partnership with your short-term providers. Those are turnkey companies that are really trending right now, and we'll talk about those a little bit more later. But those are companies that have the most insight, that come in and kind of from start to finish handle the entire process for people to come and stay in someone's apartment. And then you have ones, like you've talked about, people that own their own assets. These are normally your homeowners and people who are owning it and saying, hey, I'm traveling or I'm not here and I want people to come in and I can make a little extra money doing it. So those are really your main business models. But what we're seeing the most is the corporate housing is kind of falling to the bottom now, where it was leading the trend. And now you have the direct subleasing by residents, whether legal or not. Mm-hmm. And then you've got your turnkey providers. You do have the ability for a apartment community manager, owner, operator to list them or to be doing this on their own. But what we're finding is that that model is very difficult in our business because there's so much coming and going that then turns into the hotel model, which most apartment communities are not staffed to handle that type of responsibility.
Sure. And the corporate housing original model was basically that the potential leasee or resident who was coming in for the short-term period would walk into a furnished unit and it would have all the amenities in the kitchen, the pots, the pans, and everything. So it would be like going into renting someone's home. That is something that is, I guess, this new model with the short-term rentals, the Airbnb-type model and so forth. That's what they're doing now. So you're saying corporate housing was done back in when you started was something that the actual owners of the property did, or was that something that they leased to a third party who did that?
It was both. It was a combination. The property I specifically worked at, we had a unique model there, which was we had four corporate apartments set up all the time, and we owned the furnishings in those apartments.
Okay.
The only things that they did rent was like dishes and pans and things of that, linens, because you need to change those out pretty regularly as people are coming and going. But in terms of the actual furnishings, the couch, the bed, you know, all of the larger pieces, it was owned by the company. So any profits that they were making over top of, you know, having to pay a mortgage on that specific space, mm-hmm. that was just straight profit happening, which was great. But that was not a mandated, consistent area. Normally with corporate housing, you would partner with corporate housing partners who would come in and set the unit up for you. And sometimes they would then, you know, go and sub out furniture rental. So the company didn't necessarily have their own furniture company. They would just partner with HR organizations from large companies to help with relocation. They would bring that client in and help them get set up, do key turnover screening processes, which is a big thing, making sure the person is, you know, good to live there and matches in terms of criminal background checks and so forth of that community. And then they make sure everything looks beautiful and set up, working with other people to do so. So it was kind of, actually, I think it's best to say, Paul, that corporate housing providers are more turned into now, I guess, trending as the new turnkey short-term rental providers that
okay.
we spoke about.
So they're making the transition.
I don't think all the companies are making the transition, but I think as we see it as operators, we're definitely seeing it as that synonymous in how their operation is run and what benefits we're looking for that they're bringing to the table, right? And our expectations, I think, are very clear between those two companies.
We got about a minute and a half left, but I wanted to ask you, are you seeing a specific type of property where short-term rentals are prevalent? For instance, is it in a lease-up where they've got so many vacant units, they're just trying to create some revenue and income, or is it across the board?
LeaseUp is a great, great example. Why Hotels is a great company to look up about that. They actually partner with LeaseUp Community specifically to help you lease out short term. So you're making some revenue there, right, to help cover your cost and your cash flow while you're trying to rent up and lease out the apartment community. So that's a great example. You know, I think that where you're going to see it the most is your larger cities. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, LA and Washington, D.C. and New York, you know, take any of these large cities and there's going to be a greater value for it because you have a lot of vacationers coming in, and a lot of people that want to maybe try it before you buy it type deal with the city. But you're also going to be, you know, walk score. You want to be great distance, you know, close proximity, walking preferably to areas and events and places where people want to be. They want to experience firsthand the culture of that area. And that's how they do it best, is by staying in places that have best locality.
Okay, great. Well, we've got to take a break. We're coming to the end of our first segment of the show. We are going to be back after these brief messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of the explosion of short-term rentals, deal or no deal. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is Stephanie Anderson, Manager for Industry Operations with the National Apartment Association. Before we dive back into the conversation, I do want to let our listeners know that if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website, multifamilyradio.com. So, Stephanie, you know, we talked a little bit in the first segment about how it all got started, the precursor to what is now the short-term rental explosion in the industry. One of the questions I had is kind of a follow-up, because you had mentioned that that you had a property that you started on where they were doing corporate housing, which would be the precursor to today's short-term rentals. Obviously, if you have a property that's set up for typical standard leasing and I guess long-term leasing of units, when you bring in furniture and you've got to bring in people on a short-term basis, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, you got to have a different mindset when it comes to those units and train your people in the office. Did you see any or do you know of anything that was out there when someone's trying to do that themselves, that caused some issues?
Definitely. You know, like anything, I have to tell you, Paul, I'm not an attorney and I don't want to give you legal advice, but I think that you have to be really careful when getting involved in short-term rentals from the get-go from a risk management standpoint. You know, it does operate very, very differently. The fun stuff that operates differently is obviously you're treating them like a hotel stay, which means they're very short-term guests. You're really looking for them to leave great reviews while you're there, and you're looking to make an impact on them. And those are things we're looking for with long-term residents as well, except we have the course of multiple months to do that versus multiple days. But as we start talking about risk management and how we're going to work around these areas, because they can be quite scary, I think it's really important to really think of a strategic plan when offering short-term rental houses. And I think what we're going to do today, Paul, is kind of talk over just a few of these items that I think are really imperative.
Sure. And so the weaknesses and regulations, what's out there with that right now? What have people been seeing?
You know, there municipalities is a big one. You know, you have certain areas that prohibit what you can and cannot do in terms of length of stay and how your business operates. And what that means for you as an owner, it means hefty fines that you could incur. And you certainly don't want to do that, because if your idea here is to lease up your community faster or to make a little bit of extra revenue, then obviously paying fines is not going to help your case by any means. So you have to remember that there are certain areas that are going to prohibit short-term rentals entirely versus other areas may just have certain restrictions on that. So you want to review local zoning and administrative codes. That's really a great start for you. And to also contact your local government to determine how and whether they can even enforce short-term rentals.
And then do you have to have a specific permit or a license to do this?
In most areas, I would say yes. You know, again, this is where you have to do that research phase or speaking with an attorney or a government official that can kind of help walk you through this process. But, you know, property owners and residents, if residents are subleasing their apartments out, they may also be required to obtain additional licensings and permits and then be able to provide proof as such before actually listing their property or their apartment on any short-term rental platform. And just to give you an idea, some of them are just, you know, going to be your local or state business license. You may have a hotel license depending on where your locality is. And I know that seems strange if we're in the apartment business, but some jurisdictions do fall under hotel laws that you have to be aware of. And then you may be able to be required to register your property and maintain official records with the local government. And really, all you're inputting is data that is requested for frequency of rentals, the guest identification, you know, information that you would need to pull back up later if it came up to be a big deal. So it's really good bookkeeping here that would be required.
And, you know, obviously, you know, one of the big expenses and costs to any multifamily property is the insurance. How does doing short-term rentals affect insurance, not only the cost of it, but also the coverage?
Great thing to ask. So insurance is always a big factor here. And I always try to tell people, think about it as, I have a car and I loan it to you, Paul, to drive because your car is at the shop and you drive it and then you're involved in an accident. Well, I don't have you listed as my additional insured on my vehicle because you don't live in my home and you're not a regular driver of the vehicle. And typically, if you list additional insureds, a lot of times it can make your premiums go up because you're adding additional risk that would be involved with someone else driving the vehicle. Well, then the question comes to, who's then responsible for payment of the vehicle or payment of the other person who's in that? So very similar situation as it pertains to random guests, as we'll call them, that are coming and staying in these apartment units. They're staying for a short amount of time, but there is still risk there that there could be a fire in the home or there could be a safety or security concern. And so you really need to determine if there's additional requirements needed when you're hosting short-term rental guests. And the best person to ask that to would be your property owner's insurance provider. They can really help you to walk through questions like, who is responsible for property liability and property protection? Does that cost extra to add on additional people? How much coverage do I have? And does that include additional guests that would not be on the initial lease agreement? So it's great questions to ask, and you really should do that prior to opening up any short-term rentals.
And I guess, you know, the one of the things that I know, because I've taken, you know, some of the NAA courses over the years, when you talk about screening your residents, there's a rigorous screening process anytime a new resident, long-term resident, comes in to a new property to lease, you know, a unit. When you're bringing in guests, short-term guests. Now, if the, you know, I would imagine that if the property is doing it, or they're going to a third party that has some standards that they must follow, then you could maybe sleep a little easier at night. But if you've got your residents that are subleasing their units on a short-term basis, you know, what kind of screening process could be going on, and what does that put how does that put the property at risk?
It really does. And that's scary stuff, because when you lay your head on your pillow at night, you want to know that at minimum, those sleeping around you are those that are meeting the minimum guidelines or standards that the community has set in terms of background checks. You know, it's a really a good question when we talk about guest screening liability. You need to dictate who is responsible for screening these guests. Well, when we talked about earlier, you know, having a provider for short-term rentals, a turnkey provider, that would be a responsibility of them. When you talk about the apartment community listing it, it would be a responsibility of them, and there would be costs associated with that. And then, of course, if the resident is doing it, I think we could both agree, Paul, that they're probably not screening them. Right. Now, maybe if they're using a platform online, you know, there may have to go through some sort of process, but I can't imagine someone turning anyone else away because they're asking about their background. They're typically just saying, you're available for these nights, you're paying this fee that we've negotiated and agreed upon. And then, of course, you know, don't wreak havoc on my home while I'm gone. But the idea here is who is screening and who, you know, carries that burden if something is to happen, because the liability here is absolutely huge as to, you know, there being a crime that takes place later based on someone living within that community that was not properly screened.
And I mean, when I compare it to the hospitality industry, you know, I don't think I've ever checked into a hotel where I've had to go through a criminal background check or some kind of a credit check or whatever it might be. So, when you're doing a short-term rental, which is, you know, maybe something that's the equivalent of that, nobody who's renting is going to expect to have to go through that as well. So I'm sure that's a tightrope that's got to be walked. But it's kind of scary when you think about, you know, resident subleasing, and they're not – I agree with you. I don't think they're going to be screening their guests, their paying guests, to the same level that the office – on-site staff did when they rented the unit themselves. So I guess one more question is, what about taxes? What does that do to your tax liability?
Doesn't that word taxes just make you cringe?
It does.
You know, taxes, it's scary and it's expensive, but it's definitely something that you have to be aware of. You know, property owners specifically need to be aware of tax categories and where their specific business model for operating short-term rentals would fall in any given jurisdiction. And if your owners have properties in multiple states and cities and locations, then it's probably going to change what type of taxes that they have to pay. So that's huge, because they want to budget for these. They want to make sure that the, you know, expense is going to be okay for them to endure and that it's worth it in the end. And just to give you a quick example, you know, some of the tax categories we're talking about here, outside of the hotel tax we already talked about, you've got lodging taxes, tax registration, hotel occupancy taxes. When you go and stay at a hotel, these are all things that will show up. So you think your rental is $99 a night at the Marriott, but you know, when you get your final bill, you see that there's all these occupational taxes and state taxes. There's transient occupancy taxes. And then there's rental unit business taxes. So depending on where you're located, these can truly add up to a high expense if you're not being mindful of that in the beginning.
Absolutely. Well, we do have to take a quick break. We are going to be back with our third segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call eConserve today at 713-662-3220 for a free analysis of your property. That's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we are discussing the topic of the explosion of short-term rentals, deal or no deal. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is Stephanie Anderson, Manager for Industry Operations with the National Apartment Association. I do want to take a quick moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rasa Floors, the professional flooring advisor, specializing in make-ready replacement flooring for the multifamily industry throughout Texas and Oklahoma. WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management. And CTS, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Stephanie, we were talking about about a lot of the risk management issues. But there's been a lot of challenges to this, I understand, in certain municipalities and markets across the country. There's actually some lawsuits that have been out there. Tell us a little bit about what you know about those.
You're absolutely right, Paul. And I think as this continues to trend and become a more indicative fad as the years go on and people continue to show a demand and interest in it, I think the more that you're going to see rental legislation is a real thing for short term. And, you know, it has been for the past couple years. It's really an opportunity for states and government to come in and start to put regulations and standards and requirements that can make homeowners or property owners have to register or start limiting the amount of rental days, putting bans on rentals, or just, you know, various aspects of the rental process for short term. So it's their way of having control over it. And, you know, some of the things that we're seeing right now, the first one, I guess, was back in 2017. You might have heard this. It was a pretty big deal, but Airbnb sued Boston. Mm-hmm. And it did not come to a settlement agreement until, I believe it was November of last year, of 2018. And this was a big lawsuit with Airbnb. And the reason they sued Boston was because Boston did not want any part of continuing that short-term housing. Airbnb basically came in, Boston being a large city, a historic city, people love to come and travel there, and they felt like it was not okay for them to be doing short-term housing where they thought had those apartments, homes, and areas been rented to long-term renters or had the availability to, they would have. And so all they did from this suit was say, you know what, we're going to now function its website to require a city-issued registration number. And that started on September 1st, saying, you know, hosts that don't register with the city by a certain period of time, their listings are now taking down, and the registration is required by that local ordinance, and that the city would now have the power to notify Airbnb or other platforms of these illegal listings and have them removed from the website.
Do you have any idea what the process was for the homeowner or the apartment owner for the registration? Was it a difficult thing to do?
Well, you know, there's a fee involved, Paul, because the city is going to profit off of it. And
sure.
They had, and I don't know what the exact fee was, but they also, not just a profit, but they also have to make sure that now they have to have someone on the admin side that's monitoring this, which does come with an expense to have
sure.
someone to go through and make sure that these listings truly do have city-issued registration numbers and that they're accurate. But the registration process, I would imagine, is very simple in terms of listing the address, who the homeowners are, who would be staying there, how many weeks or months would you be looking to, you know, offer listings for your home within a given period of time. But again, just listing all that information so that they know how many times you're listing it and how many nights you have someone staying there. And I do think that it is beneficial in some ways, Paul, to mention, because that data is really important as we move forward to know where that demand is. Where is there supply and demand? And, you know, then that helps for our apartment owners and operators to determine if this is the best fit for them in that particular city or area.
And have any other municipalities gotten involved besides Boston?
There's a couple that have. San Francisco, this year, they began limiting the number of nights a year that an absentee owner can rent their property through any platform, and they require a $250 registration fee to the city. So if you are an owner, an operator, and want to rent out that area, you've got to pay that $250 registration fee. That's an annual fee paid to the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, L.A. is another one. L.A. has a new Airbnb rule, and, you know, theirs really comes from this whole explosion of short-term rentals. They feel it's turned apartment buildings into hotels and that it has pinched the city's tight housing supply. So that comes down to available housing and the legislative issues that have been going through and figuring out, you know, putting mandates on how long in a specific apartment or home or room can be rented in a given amount of time.
And I guess it also potentially, if they don't have any thing in place to charge those same taxes like you would get on at a hotel stay, if there's no mechanisms in place, they're losing that revenue as well.
Yes. And, you know, the city specifically with L.A., they gave some interesting numbers. They were arguing that 6,000 to 10,000 units in that city alone would have been long-term renters, and they define long-term renters as someone renting for more than 12 months, would have been the primary source for those residents versus these short-term rentals. They're basically saying that short-term rental was stealing housing from those who needed long-term housing.
So is that trying to put the put that on the backs of the third-party companies that would may come in and lease several, you know, block of units inside of a property, and they're the ones who are, for lack of a better term, guilty of taking away long-term rentals, or for the actual owners that are doing it on their own? It, certainly, I don't know that they would. It would be hard for me to understand how they could say that someone who is actually leasing the apartment and just leases it out for a short period of time, you know, that subleases it, would be something that would be an issue like that.
And I think it could be a combination of both, but I think in this particular case, and with LA being such a sexy city and a place that people really want to visit for shorter periods of time, I think that they're finding they have some persons who come in and rent. They will rent or purchase condos, houses, you know, apartments, and that they will then, with no intentions to ever live there, you know, purchasing them or renting them in terms of just solely flipping, as we'll call, for it to be short-term rental housing.
Mm.
And so I think that some cities are seeing a lot larger than what we're seeing in our own areas. But, you know, all those small amounts are adding up. And I think it's important to note, Paul, that just this year alone, 15 states debated bills that were geared towards regulating short-term rental housing. So I think it's important that, you know, you start to have these conversations and look into this a little bit more to see if the model fits you and your business.
Now, I know NAA, you know, gets involved in lobbying for different issues with different government authorities. What has been the position when it comes to dealing with this? Is NAA kind of on a standing back and looking at it to try and get a feel for where the traction is, or are they already involved in lobbying for whatever it might be important to the industry?
Well, I think the rise of Airbnb and other short-term and flexible rentals is an evolution in the rental housing marketplace. And our members specifically are investigating what model works for them. You know, we get asked quite a bit about the affordability crisis and how that ties into short-term rentals and Airbnb. And I think that we always bring it back to affordability is a nuanced conversation. And, you know, we really see this as a supply and demand issue. And there's a great demand for rental housing where supply is already constrained. And that just leads to upward pricing pressure. So I think it's something that NAA continues to monitor. Our legislative team continues to speak with, you know, local jurisdictions and state and to try to find how we fit that balance and what's in the best interest of our members.
What do you think was the impetus that caused this explosion? Was it the fact that now everything can be done online and these websites, you know, serve as clearinghouses for all these units and so forth, as opposed to years ago when there was no internet available, and like you had said, that, you know, a lot of it was the corporate housing market that was doing something like this?
I absolutely think the internet plays a huge role here because it's a convenience factor. Mm-hmm. How easy is it to go online and book and find some cool place to stay? And, you know, people say, well, you can already do that with hotels, which is true. That's a valid point. But with hotels, you're getting, unless you're staying at like a boutique style hotel, a lot of your larger corporate entity hotels are very cookie cutter. They have nice amenities, but, you know, you still have to go through this whole process of standing in line to check into your room, and there's really no privacy, right, because you're sharing a common lobby with all these people and you're seeing them, versus when you start to stay in someone's home or, and relevant to this conversation, an apartment community, you become one of them. You become part of that experience. And if that experience is in these local cities and hubs that have walking distance and an opportunity to really experience firsthand the culture of that area, that's what people are looking for. They're looking for a cool experience that they can post about on Instagram and that they can share with their friends and that they can really make it into this big dramatic vacation, right, or this big, huge stay. And that's what they want, is that experience. And they want to tell about it. And, you know, so I think it's just over the years, as social media trends and internet becomes more widely used, I definitely think that that's contributed to the explosion, as we call it.
All right. Well, all great information. We are going to be back after these messages with our fourth and final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and we are discussing the topic of the explosion of short-term rentals, deal or no deal. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me by phone is Stephanie Anderson, Manager for Industry Operations with the National Apartment Association. And Stephanie, we've talked about in the three previous segments the strengths, you know, why to consider short-term rentals, the weaknesses, the regulatory considerations that are out there, and then the challenges, the legalities. We discussed some lawsuits that have occurred in different municipalities. So one thing we need to discuss is, what are the opportunities? What are the advantages and opportunities for doing this at a multifamily property? What are your thoughts?
You know, I found an interesting statistic I wanted to share. You know, NAA did a survey, and we partnered with J. Turner Research and polled over 12,000 residents. And what we asked them was, what was their willingness to live in a community that allowed short-term rentals? Because we hear constantly from owners and operators that say, if I was to offer short-term rentals in my apartment community, I would lose all of my good standing residents, or I would be less likely to keep people long-term because rumor would have it what was happening and people would move out. So part of the questions that we polled was to find out the truth with these 12,000 residents all over in different localities, how they felt about it. And I thought this was really great, was that only 19%, Paul, of these residents polled out of 12,000 said they would definitely not ever live at a community that did short-term leasing. That's only 19%. So now as we talk about short-term rentals, we can't really use that as an excuse or a reason as to why not to do it. Now, we can say the hotel taxes are too high, or that our location of our property doesn't make sense. It's not near a larger hub city, or it's not an area in which people may want to stay. You know, we can talk about that, but we can't use residents, you know, willingness to not be a part of it, because it's really coming down to the majority of the residents, more than majority, were saying, I'm okay with it, as long as they meet or exceed the standards or guidelines that are set within the community. So when we talk about those background screening, you know, they want that comfort level. But other than that, it doesn't matter. And I think we're seeing that as a generational idea here, Paul, that people are okay with the changes because they're not going and socializing as much with residents in their home. They are in the social atmosphere of a clubhouse and pool, but as it pertains to their own individual apartment, they're pretty private people. And so I think that that's a great way to kind of talk about opportunity here.
And so if there's not resident concern, what opportunities are there for revenue or additional revenue?
Well, you know, people are saying, is the profit margin large enough? That's going to depend on where you're located, what your government regulations or standards are in your area, right? Because there's additional permits, licensing, taxes, insurance, liability, things that we've talked about before. You know, there is an opportunity, though, for a model within certain apartment communities that are located in certain areas to maybe partner with a short-term rental company, and to be able to not only provide an experience to people that will then share the community with others, so that's the great word of mouth, but to also make some money in the process of it. And I think that we have to keep in our mind that short-term housing is happening. It's happening all around us, mm-hmm. whether our owners, operators, or managers are approving of it. So we have to decide, what's the old saying, you know, if you're not on the boat, you're in the water.
Right.
Well, we have to decide, are we going to be on the boat or are we in the water with this particular idea? Because there's no middle ground here. We have to decide if we're going to do it or we're not going to do it. And I think that it allows a positive here, an opportunity, is that it allows overall control of your apartment community, because your residents, right, we found earlier 5% of all listings were unauthorized by their apartment communities just on Airbnb and other platforms alone. So those are ones that we're able to find out about. But we're noting that residents are doing this whether we let them or not, regardless of their lease agreement. So let's take back control of our community. Let's take control over the security measures we put in place, who we're allowing to be there, and being able to make a little bit of profit off of that as well.
You know, it seems to me, and you know, from my knowledge of being in this industry for so many years, that the short-term rental third-party company, the companies that are out there, that seems to be the way to go, as opposed to trying to do it in-house with your existing on-site staff. Because you know they have to learn two different ways of doing things when you're doing short-term versus the other. And obviously, you know, there's some issues, or there are some obvious issues with resident subleasing. And let's talk about that a little bit. You know, what are what can a property do, and what are they doing to try and prevent and control, as you mentioned, the existing residents subleasing theirs for short-term rentals?
You know, a common question you'll get on the site staff in the leasing office from a resident, especially if they're relocating or they need to get out of their lease agreement or they need options, they'll come in and say, you know, can I sublease my apartment? Can I find someone to take over my lease is usually the type of terminology they will use. And they're doing that because they don't want to have to pay any hefty termination fees or anything negative that would be incurred from them, you know, leaving their lease early, canceling their lease. And, you know, it's going to depend on which lease you use, because obviously we do have the NAA lease at the national level, but we have so many of our members that still do use, you know, their own within their own company, their own leases. And so, you know, it should be spelled out how your company allows subleasing, if they even do at all. But wouldn't it be nice to have an option for that resident that comes in and says, you know, I would like for somebody to take over my lease? Well, if they're mentioning it to you, they're already thought about it,
sure,
which means they could possibly already have an ad on Craigslist or any other platform to find someone to take the place. So how do we have this conversation of, can we charge them application fees and fees to find us the person? And then we're doing the background screening. Can we use a short-term rental provider that, you know, would post the listing for us and do it from start to finish in that process? You know, there's so many different options here, and that all goes back to the different models and what fits the business and what's going to meet or exceed the goals and objectives of that owner for that community. But I think it is important to note that some of the management companies we're seeing having great success with the STR model with turnkey providers is Amley, Bozzuto, and Cortland. Those are three industry leaders that are saying, hey, this works for us. And they don't do it for their entire portfolios, but the point is they're finding what works and they're taking control of it within their business. And it's I think it's worth looking at from their perspective.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I was thinking about an example in Austin, Texas. You know, they have a huge event every year called South by Southwest. And there are people that I know that live in Austin. They live in multifamily properties, and they have listed their, you know, on, I guess on Airbnb or one of those services, their units for the 2 or 3 weeks that the event is going on, and they'll just, you know, go drive visit a family member somewhere, but they see it as a way to make some additional income. It's not something that they're wanting to sublease to get out of the lease forever, but they're doing it because it's you know, the housing is short during that period of time when that huge event occurs every year. Are you seeing some of that around the country?
We do. You actually, well, we're in football season now, okay? So
right.
With the NFL games that travel, you will find people that will specifically go on Airbnb or other platforms just looking for places to stay, because hotels sell out so quick. Anytime there's a huge concert or a sporting event, think about the Olympics. So we have the Olympics, you know, coming up next year in 2020. Those are all areas in which people will be looking for short-term rental opportunities, and there's great money to be made there. So, yes, we are finding that people like to do it for even those short periods of time. Even if it's not consistent, they will take advantage of an event or an opportunity and be able to make a little extra money for it.
Sure. All right. Well, there's so much to talk about on this topic, and I know that it's something that is going to be continuing to evolve over a period of time, and I know NAA is going to keep their eye on it, but let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that NAA is doing right now. What's going on with NAA?
You know, we're always busy and into something, so I just wanted to share a couple of things that our team is working on right now. The 2019 income and expense survey is now available, so hopefully you've seen that come out. What that is it's just a report that really gives detailed local data, and this is important here because it's local that you can get data for your specific area. It's in over 90 single markets, and then, of course, also there's the national economic analysis, which is huge, and this really gives our operators the financial tools they need when talking about benchmarking performance against their peers. So, and of course, it's during budget season as well, so it's kind of a win-win. If you hadn't seen the report, it's great, and we would love to help you with that. Some other things that we have going on is the Smart Home Technology Report. And I know during my last visit with you, Paul, we talked quite a bit about technology as it pertains to smart home and what's going on in the industry. So we did a full report on this that if you go to our website at naahq.org, all members can access that for free. And it's a great report. I really encourage you to take a look at that.
What's an interesting takeaway from that report that you think would generate enough interest for someone to want to go get it?
You know, they first pull out results from a 2016 survey that NAA did in terms of the top 40 amenities that residents are looking for in their home. Well, now when you translate that data from 2016 to here we are in 2019 and seeing the trends, what is changing? We also have information from operators in there that are saying, this is what we're doing, this is what we thought about doing, and these are the reasons why. They talk about the top trends right now in smart home technology, and they do take it steps further. So they do talk about sustainability, they do talk about financial impact, and they're not just talking about, you know, thermostats, right? They take it to a whole nother level. And I think it's just in you know, big information. My biggest takeaways were the graphs. There are a ton of graphs in there that talk about who's doing what, when, where, and how. And so if you want to know what your peers are doing, or you want to get ahead of that curve, or maybe your company's a little bit more conservative and says, well, I don't want to be the first to do it, but I certainly don't want to be the last, I think it's a very beneficial report for you to analyze and start to talk about what your company can do to move forward and in what ways.
Are there any events coming up for NAA that people should know about?
In terms of events, you know, we have Maximize, mm-hmm. you know, NAA's Maximize conference. We talked about that last time. Other than that, you know, we have already started preparing for next year's Apartmentalize. It will be in Boston, Apartmentalize 2020 in June. Mm-hmm. And so you will be getting emails out here shortly that start to talk about call for submissions as we're looking for presenters to come to NAA's conference and speak about hot topics and trends and so forth, which is huge. We also have our Assembly of Delegates coming up in November in Greenville, and that is the time where your newly elected officials for the board and leaders within NEA or volunteer leaders will then be able to be inducted, and we'll get to learn more about them and some of their initiatives and plans that they have for the following year. So that's also a very exciting time.
Great. Well, Stephanie, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and you know, you always come armed with a lot of great information. So, you know, we'll have you on again soon. And we always are happy to talk about NAA and what's happening with them. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Yeah. So we will be back next Friday at 10 a.m. with another great show and panel of guests. You are listening, or have been listening, to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.